Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Rebecca, who is here to speak with us about our first official practice offering related to the 2019 Bridgewalk campaign. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thanks, Jen.
So I really want to cover kind of two territories, one being to highlight what the actual practice opportunity is so that people can hear about that and see if that's something they want to participate in. And then to also look at, as I say, it's the, you know, we've got sort of this new component to the Bridgewalk this year, and this is the first official offering through that component, and so I want to talk about that as well. So maybe we could start with talking about what is the offering? What's on offer?
Mm-hmm. What's on offer? Eating group coaching. And so for those who aren't familiar,
Rebecca, I don't know if it was, it probably was just my connection, but I missed the first word you said.
Oh, well, that's an
compassion.
Important word. It was joyful.
joyful.
Yeah, joyful eating group coaching. Yeah. And so, you know, many people, I think, are familiar with the group coaching format, but just in case, shall I just lay it out a little
bit? Yes, please. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So this particular one is 4 weeks, starting November 20th. It's on Wednesdays, 4 to 5 Pacific time. And we meet once a week for an hour on a group conference call. And it's just like open group, where people can basically make a show, may say their name and participate in what they're seeing around their the particular focus of incorporating joyful eating into their life. And we have a midweek email check-in accountability measure just to kind of help people. You know, sometimes we can go to sleep during the week, and we want to, you know, have a way to built in to help us get here. So, you know, everybody is encouraged to put that on a little tickler on their calendar, send my midweek email, and that's another support in coming back here and reminder of our practice focus. So that's the structure of the thing, and it goes for, like I said, 4 weeks. And the joyful eating part of it is just one of my favorite things in the whole world. And we it's quite intentional that it's right before Thanksgiving and right before, you know, a lot of the other religious holidays where food and festivities really take a center stage in people's lives. Mm-hmm. I'll stop there, or shall I continue?
No, please do. Yeah, I'm completely nodding right with you.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. So, you know, here's the thing. I mean, I was conditioned, like I project a lot of people were, that food at a really young age became something that was kind of the fun was taken out of it. You know, like for me, I remember it was the first time when somebody told me, I was just a little kid, that donuts have a ton of calories. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know what a calorie was, but I knew
you could tell it wasn't
bad,
good.
By the way she said.
And especially as a little girl, something to be avoided, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like a nine-year-old now, just to, you know, no fun. And, but then over the years, what practice has added to my life is the loving, enthusiastic mentor who could take me into a produce department in a grocery store and being filled with a sense of adventure and of fun and beauty, and who could help me, encourage me as I was trying new recipes and kicking a sugar, you know, addiction and all of these things. It was all about expanding the notion of joyful eating, not, you know, as for years as I tried to get a grip on it. You know, that's not what we're doing. We're expanding it into the joy, not trying to get a grip of control. And so it's really about supporting one another in that orientation to food, what not only feels good to the body, but is just seemingly inherently gorgeous, fun, and tasty.
It reminds me of that one of Sherry's quotes of, you know, don't don't work on taking away what you don't want in your life. Just focus on adding what you do want.
Yep.
And that feels you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And, you know, Jim, that was actually, that quote was my mantra for many years of practicing with this content, that very thing. Mm. Yeah, it's exactly it.
Mm. So good. And as you say, the timing of it could not be better. Because, I mean, the other thing that's just kind of, I can't remember who I was talking to relatively recently, but I think it was actually one of my sisters who, you know, just that uphill battle of, you know, there you've got these kids, right? And everyone around you, including the, quote, grown-ups, the adults, everyone has this idea that that sugar is special. When we're going to make something special, we're going to get a lot of sugar and a lot of, you know, basically all these things that are not good for us. And then if you're not going to have that, then you're mean, you're bad, and you're deprived, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that's a big piece of that push-pull during the holiday season is, how do you take care of yourself? How do you have the actual joyful potential that's there in this time of year without all the basically self-hate traps that are all over the place around it?
Yes. And, you know, that is just so it. And so, you know, to have the mentor, that's where presence is as always, our best friend. Because when we're here, this is my experience anyway, to actually taste a perfectly toasted sunseed. Oh my God. It's just exquisite.
I just went right there.
And to actually taste and feel the greasy feel of a donut in the side of your mouth is just not that pleasant. When you're actually there for
present
it.
Present to it. Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah. When you're really present for it, so it's not depriving, it's actually a conscious, willing choice. And because in my experience, it doesn't work to just, quote, give it up. You know,
it doesn't. Absolutely not.
It's presence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, as we say, this is, it technically won't be the first offering to happen. The first offering to happen that's in support of the Bridge Walk will be on Saturday, December 16th, not unrelated. The Monastery Cook is going to be walking us through a lovely workshop around eating during the holidays. It's called A Recipe for Thanksgiving. And so we'll be getting some of the great monastery recipes that are related to holiday eating and looking at just all aspects of it, preparing the food and enjoying the food and all of it. So that'll be first one that begins. And then
that's November 16th, you said, right?
Yes, 16th? Exactly.
Yeah, yep. Got it.
November 16th, yep. And then the group coaching that you're talking about begins the following Wednesday. As you say, it's four Wednesdays. And so I just wanted to talk for a minute. I know we are close to the hour, but it's one of my favorite things. It's become kind of my favorite part of the 2019 Bridgewalk season, this idea that in some way inviting everyone in the Sangha to take whatever part they want in the Bridgewalk season, and that these practice offerings are a way to do that. And I just wondered if you could speak a little bit about your experience of kind of participating in that way.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I so loved that component, that was that 100% participation was what we were going for. And that participation could look so many different ways. You know, we've used this phrase, practice supporting practice, for a there. I'm doing practice, and just the doing it and the offering it supports my own practice. And to me, that's what we're doing, but we're broadening out. So it's like practice supporting everything. So I
yes, exactly.
It's a practice, and it not only supports me in my waking up, but it supports children eating, women going to college, children learning English, you know, the cooperative getting to have meaningful work and a roof over their head and food on their table and just all of those things. It's just like this beautiful ripple effect that has happened and all set up and, you know, to be a win-win for everyone.
And you know what I saw when you said that, Rebecca, was, so maybe I'm someone who, like, I hear about the joyful eating and I think, wow, that's for me. You know, that's really, but I don't know. I mean, it's kind of, do I have the time and do I really want to, and you know, maybe just that extra, you know what, participating in this is not only going to be a huge gift for me, of course, what we also know is that my participation is going to be a huge gift to everyone else who does that practice offering, because anything I say and anything I'm offering is going to be for everyone else as well, but also mm-hmm. that my registration to do that, 100% of that is going to the Project in Cantalumba. So it could just be that kind of extra, ooh, isn't that fun?
Yeah. It's like, well, okay, I want to do joyful eating, but I won't do it for myself, but I'll do it for the love of others, you know?
Yeah,
and
truly.
Maybe I would get talked out of doing it just because I want to, but, hey, it's going to help others. So that's a twofer, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Or we could say, I don't know, what's the word for when it benefits
infinity?
100,000 people? Exactly. There must be a special word for that. Exactly.
Yeah.
And
it
I
is.
Know
it's such
you
a beautiful.
I was just going to say you having been able to be there on the ground more than once, and so getting to really you know the folks who are going to get to benefit from this in Cantalumba, and so just that place of, I don't know, there's just something so special about being able to sort of have one's own depth of practice and facilitate. Be a way to participate and give back to a community that we love so much.
Well, and you know, Jen, I realize we're up against the hour, but one little story is dropping in. May I tell it real quick about the ripples?
Absolutely.
So it was how I came to get to Africa, because it was in 2010. I just put out to some practice thing, and I just put out to the guide and you and others, I want to go to Africa. And I got some encouragement. Oh, yeah, it'd be great, you know. And so then it just became, I don't know how I'm going to pay for that, how I'm going to get myself to Africa, but at least, okay, there it is. It's out there in the universe. And I was just talking about it to a colleague friend of mine, just kind of putting it out there. I know what I want to do. I want to go to Africa. There's this project we do. And she said, you know what, I think I can help you. And she kind of got this little tone of voice of it. She said, I've got some money in my budget, and we can bring you in to do a workshop for our teachers and principals, and that'll be, you know, $2,000, and that should be enough to get your plane ticket to Africa. And you know, that is exactly what happened. And so I got to go in and do this workshop that I just had a ball doing, got the money, and there it was. It was just like putting it out to the universe, and you never know where those pockets of money, of time, of willingness are going to come.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. That is such a perfect illustration of all of it, really.
Yeah. And here we are all these years later.
Here we are. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for your participation in the Bridgewalk season. You know, you've been participating from the start, but especially this year, and for being with us this afternoon to talk about it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for setting it all up for us to have this wonderful opportunity.
Oh,
it's just really fun.
So,
thanks.
That's where we say, yep, life did a good job.
We're all so fortunate.
Thank
you, Jen.
Thanks, Rebecca. Okay. Bye-bye. And Michael, as I turn it over to you and Ashwini, I just wanted to let folks know that our next Bridgewalk support call will be a week from tomorrow, so November 13th at 5 p.m. Pacific time, and that an email went out just today with that information, all the call-in information, et cetera, as well as highlighting what Rebecca was just talking about, and also the recipe for Thanksgiving offering on the 16th, and just links to the Bridgewalk and talking about what a wild success it's already being and all of that. So if people haven't checked it out, they can find that email in their inbox.
Great. So let me just reflect back the time and date. So the next support call for the Africa campaign is Wednesday, November 13th. That's a week from tomorrow at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And the details are in an email that came out today.
That's exactly right. Yep.
All right. Perfect.
All right. Thanks,
Thank
Michael.
You,
have a great show.
Rebecca. Okay, we will. Bye. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Good afternoon. Good evening. How are you?
Good. Great. It's a beautiful. It's a beautiful sunset.
Yes. Yes, it is. And I love that story of Rebecca's about knocking on the door, metaphorically, and then the door opening.
Yes, ask and you should receive, and we don't know how that happens, and that's just the mystery we get to enjoy.
Yes, 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 exactly. Beautiful story.
Yeah.
And I have announcements here, unless you'd like to start us in a different direction.
No, announcements are good. What's coming
okay.
up, Michael?
Okay, great. As we just heard about, it is the season for grateful cooking and joyful eating. Two new offerings will help guide us in holiday well-being and, at the same time, support Living Compassion Africa. On Saturday, November 16th, everyone is invited to partake in a recipe for Thanksgiving, a virtual exploration of the best ingredients for any celebration. And then, beginning Wednesday, November 20th, a new group coaching class will support us in the practice of conscious eating as we face the challenges that the holidays can bring. The four-week joyful eating class includes conference call, group sessions, and recording and listening suggestions and tips. And then celebrate 2019 and welcome 2020 with a community of folks dedicated to practicing conscious, compassionate awareness at our New Year's retreat, December 27th through January 1st in the San Francisco Bay Area. This retreat features group discussions, guidance with Sherry, delicious food, and free time to spend in nature on the beautiful, spacious grounds.
And some great yoga.
Yes, great yoga too. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to get in the queue today to talk with Ashwini, you can press *6 and then 1 to make guest show. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. Okay, I think that covers it. Ashwini, you ready to start?
Yep.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Ashwini. This is Margaret from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hey, Margaret.
Hi. You know, I don't have a question today, but I just wanted to have an experience that it was significant, and it is, part of it is just feeling really grateful for the bridge walk focus, you know, about having practice offerings and having all of Sangha be able to participate, and just what a joyful offering that is. And mm-hmm. so I wanted to express appreciation for that, for one.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Margaret, I think the process that you're pointing to is so important that it's not necessary that we have a question or a problem that we bring to the show. We're always talking about process, right? And the process that you're talking about is appreciation and gratitude and generosity and an awareness of how that is what is fueling the way in which the bridge walk is constructed this year, that people offer their practice because they're so grateful to this practice, and people participate in this practice because they're so grateful to this practice and they love to practice. And what we get is a generous outpouring of support to the project in Africa. And it's such a wonderful structure.
Yes, it's very beautiful. And so what happened, I opened up the description of the Thanksgiving workshop.
Yes. Yes.
And as I read it, and as I read it, it was like my heart just broke open with, and I kind of stunned in the silence almost, about just unconditional love. And it was kind of that flash of just realizing, like, what that really means and or what that experience really is like. And and at the, kind of at the same time, there was this just this brief, you know, kind of moment of awareness about, wow, if we all made a commitment to support, you know, being that, you know, to like living our lives from that space, there was just a sense of like, oh my gosh, that is beautiful and kind of daunting at the same time, which is, you know, conditioning to sort of jump in and say, oh, you can't do this and you have to give up that or whatever, that kind of conversation. But that's not where it went at first. It was more like just, oh, it was just very sobering, I guess, you know, and amazing at the same time. It's like, oh.
Yes.
It's so important, you know.
Yeah, say more about important.
Because it feels like that is what's true and the most authentic reflection of authenticity through this human.
And
like we're all a cell in the body of the Buddha, that kind of awareness is like, when I'm in that kind of awareness, I make different choices and I do different things, you know, than when I'm caught in the, or being led around by the nose with, conditioned mind, self-hate.
Yes. Yes. So there's so much in what you were saying, right, Margaret? Because I think, first of all, you read the description and it was a lovely description because it was actually a recipe for Thanksgiving, right? And it's a recipe of unconditional love, a pinch of laughter and a dash of kindness and all mixed together in a bowl of awareness and it serves all. And it took you to that place of unconditional love. The way I heard you say it, it was a recognition of what we are authentically. You had that experience. And while you were in that place of such open-heartedness and possibility, and there comes the voice that says, you know, but that's really not possible, right? That we're here in this place where we're considering not just being there, but it being the way we could live our lives. And if everyone committed to this orientation, how wonderful it would be. And we watch the force that prevents us from being there come in to attempt to redirect the attention. And that's why it's so wonderful and sobering, because we can see that if we're living in that place of unconditional love, our life would be so different than if we're living in that place of negation, that voice comes in and shuts down, right?
Yeah, so it was really kind of an awareness of that it is possible to live that way in unconditional love and expansive, you know, authenticity, that it is possible. And then, like you said, just sort of right behind that is like, oh, you know, just the awareness of that, I was going to say background, but it's often in the foreground, the fear and the, you know, just how we are as ordinary human beings caught up in that karmically conditioned, you know, conversation. So it was kind of this seeing both of those things in awareness. So I guess the one thing that was nice about it, there was this sense of like, oh, it is possible to live in unconditional kindness and authenticity.
Yes. And I suspect it was even further than that, right, Margaret? Because in that moment of realization, that moment of open-heartedness, that was your reality. You were there. It's not just
the
possibility. It's the reality, right? And it's the only reality. And from that place of awareness, it's possible to see
the movement away from that through the attention by not just the negating voice, but also to convert the reality into a possibility rather than this is my experience now.
That is the perfect reflection of what I got to experience. I just was drenched in this unconditional love, and I was there. I'm looking forward to listening back to this because you really described it perfectly.
Yeah.
In living it, we're living the possibility in this moment, and it's that kind of one might say that means there are other possible moments that could be happening too, like stringing all the moments together.
Yes, exactly. That's where I think instead of looking at it as from a regretful place, it becomes the fire that causes us to practice, right? Because in every moment that I'm not there, I want to be there. And that's what I'm going to have my attention on, which is when I'm not there, I'm going to try to get back here. And every moment of awakening is a thank you, I'm here. Thank you, I'm here. Oh, well, my attention is wandering. There's an awareness of that. Thank you, I'm here. And so we flip the default from we're not here to, oh, how wonderful it is when we are, to how wonderful it is when we are. And there are fewer and fewer occasions where we wander from that.
Yes. Well, thank you for the opportunity to share. It's been a very long time since I have been on Open Air and I've been able to listen and participate. So I'm very grateful to speak to you both and be in the presence of Sangha in this way.
And we're grateful to have you speak with us, Margaret. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Margaret. And Ashwini, I just loved how the both of you pulled that out, that conditioning wants to talk to me about the possibility of being present. Oh, and I could be, and how it's going to be, to take me away from I'm actually having that experience right now at this moment.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's what happens when it's sort of what makes us all giggly with gratitude when we have these experiences and practice and can process together as Sangha, right? We arrive at one place, and when we look at it, we can get to so many places in the looking.
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Jenny from New Mexico.
Hey, Jenny.
Hi. Let's see. I guess my question involves karma. I have been struggling with karma my whole life about being overweight. And even like in elementary school when I really wasn't that overweight, and I can like look back at pictures of me in high school and stuff when I was actually quite thin. And but my mom had this karma for herself, and so I was completely engrossed in this karma of being overweight even when I wasn't. And it now that I'm older, I'm still have this karma, but I do happen to be overweight. But it's unfortunate because I watch my mom. And, you know, she's 30 years older than me, and she's spent her whole life in this karma and struggling with it, and I just see myself as going to be in this karma for the rest of my life, and I don't want that. I would rather bring awareness to it or something that I could actually be free from it and not just follow for the rest of my life in the same karma.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so
but
many
I also
things
want
that
to be healthy.
Yes. Well, and that you bring up a really, really good point, right, Jenny? That part of what so here, let me reflect what you said and let tease out the importance of the awareness that you had in that whole process, right? So you grew up around someone who was conditioned to have something going about their weight.
Yes.
And so that was something you internalized, right? And that's what we
right.
do. We get these messages when we're little kids, and then when we grow up, those messages, we take them on in some way. And so that's the story. I am overweight, and I have a problem with weight, and I'm going to do what I need to do around that. And so that is what you define as karma, right? Because your mom had it, then you inherited
yes.
it, and you watch how it's attempting to run your life or be
it
your
does.
Life.
It does.
Right? Right?
It does,
and
yeah.
so then you're an awareness practitioner, and you realize that it's not who you are. It's a
right.
program that got attached to you that is running you. That's a huge insight to have, that it's not that you're overweight and you've got to work the rest of your life to resolve your weight issues or be in a story about your weight. That causes the suffering. And what you're actually
right.
saying is, I don't want to spend my life having my attention on a story around weight, which is the content, but a process in which I suffer. That's really what you're saying you don't want, right?
Right.
And when we realize that it's not, if we are working on this at a content level, which is about weight, then we've got to work out what's wrong with me, that I can't lose weight and I can't stick to a diet and I don't want to do that and I'm a victim here and of the conditioning and I've got this karma going and all of the elements of that story. But the awareness that that's karma, that's a program, I don't want to subject myself and be giving my attention and my life force to maintaining that story.
Right.
Then I can look at, okay, let me bring awareness to the process. My intention is I want to be healthy.
Right.
So then that's where I could put my attention on wanting to be healthy.
Okay.
And not necessarily giving my attention to a story that causes me to suffer.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean I'm giving my life over to conditioning, right? It just means that my attention is on being healthy, not feeding the story of suffering. That's very
right.
different.
Right, because, like, I've watched it, you know, I've watched it because of practice,
mm-hmm.
and it just, it's like a catch-22, it's just, whenever food comes up, it starts the story, and it just, the program starts, like you said, you know, it's like this whole program, and it starts, and it's got this, you know, you overeat something, or you eat something you shouldn't, and then it's got, oh, this is wrong, and all this stuff, and I'm like, this is all just a bunch of karma, and it's like you said, it's not who I am, it's not who I want to be anymore. I would rather be able to eat normally and be healthy and not have the story.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly it. That was the insight that you so beautifully articulated. I don't have to have the story. And part of what the story has you believing is that if you put any attention on being healthy and eating well, you're
mm-hmm.
doing the same thing that your mom did for so many years and has
okay.
it's ruined her life, right?
That's true.
So
yeah,
we don't want to put
true.
Those things together. That's part of the story. To me, you and I, all of us, right? If we are taking care of the body and we want to be healthy and we want to nourish the body, that is a daily practice. It's something that we have to pay attention to daily. I mean, what
right.
we eat is what we are. At some level, it nourishes us. It takes
yeah.
care of us. It is what our energy is. And so it's not that you give all of your waking moments into thinking about what you're going to eat, but it's a very important aspect, just like exercise or where your attention is. It's custody of the attention, right? And so when you make a decision to be healthy and to take care of your body, that's a day-by-day focus of attention. We all eat three meals a day, so we have to attend to how we prepare that meal and whether it's nourishing or not. It doesn't translate into, oh, you're obsessed about weight issues and you're going to be doing this for the rest of your life and that's the focus of your attention, so, oh, my God, you're going to end up like your mother, right?
Yeah.
The truth of it is that you do. If you want to be healthy, that's a major amount of focus of attention.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what I'm choosing to do. But what I'm not choosing to do is indulge some conversation that has an opinion about how much time I spend thinking about my healthy food or paying attention to my body or any of those things.
Okay. I thought maybe bringing in recording and listening to it, and that would increase my attention whenever I start to eat. And I can record before I eat and stuff like that.
Yes.
So that I'm not just like in conditioned mind. The story doesn't just start whenever I go to the kitchen and I start my food and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then I could have that other aspect.
Yes,
of
beautiful.
Listening.
So absolutely. So a structure that supports the human being to have attention on what she chooses, which is to be healthy, and not have her attention on a story that feeds her all kinds of lies and is only interested in perpetuating itself. And so that's a beautiful structure, right? So a recording that reminds you why I want to eat healthy and to do that before you eat and after you eat with no self-hate if that doesn't happen. You know, see how it goes for a week. Maybe do the joyful eating, mindful eating group coaching, right?
Okay.
With Rebecca, because that's exactly what she was talking about. How do I bring an attitude of joy to grocery shopping and an attitude of gratitude to food rather than feeling deprived because I have to stop eating something in order to meet ego standards?
Right.
And so it's so, so wise that, first of all, there's awareness of the karma. There's the willingness to go up against the karma. There's the bringing practice to it and bringing a structure that's supportive to the human being in order to assist her to do what she wants in a loving and compassionate way.
Okay. All right. I will definitely try that. And thank you for giving me a different perspective on it.
You're most welcome, and keep us posted, okay?
Okay, all right, I will. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Jenny.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jenny. And Ashwini, I really enjoyed that conversation, especially the piece about, you know, with eating, with taking care of myself and being healthy. Yes, I am going to need to bring a lot of time and attention and resources to that. And being super mindful about when that switches into the conditioned story of how I am with food and what my problem is, and it moves beyond the attention in the moment on this specific content into that something wrong story.
Exactly. And makes what's true a problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And Ashwini, we are going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Great. Thank you, Michael.
Sure.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. give voice to your heart, and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Double muted, perhaps?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Ashwini. It's Elizabeth. I was double muted.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Thanks for reminding me. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I need some guidance working out my own salvation with some deep demon doo-doo.
Okay. Say more about your deep demon doo-doo, Elizabeth.
So my whole life I've had a total aversion to the Father, and I've had no contact with him for 20 years. The last contact I had was in a therapy appointment, and my therapist supported me to confront him and asking him to treat me with respect. And we can all imagine how that went, how that turned out. So 30 years later, well, 20 years later, now I'm 54, and even the thought of email contact with him through an anonymous email account gets me immediately identified with racing heart, panic, disgust, terror, revulsion. And I have a recording for that. But my question is, the big question all comes down to, Zen awareness practice and self-growth really comes down to facing our triggers, without which there is no liberation.
So, okay, go ahead.
So, I guess I feel like I do have to face this or I will never be liberated. At the same time, I have nightmares at night about being trapped with him. So, just looking for anywhere to start, maybe more two-handed, I don't know.
Well, it's such an interesting question, right, Elizabeth, because there's so much, so many assumptions in that, right? So your intention is not to suffer, right? And let me point to something that Sherry often says. We don't have to go looking for workshops. Life's going to give us plenty of them. Right? Whatever arises is there in your life is what we use to end suffering, right? What causes us to suffer so we can wake up, and we use everything in our experience. And so that's one piece of it. And I guess one of the interesting places to start to explore this is, why would you want to confront it? I mean, clearly,
why would
every
I?
Time... You know, why would you want, what is, so in a different context, is this a setup?
Why would I want to have contact, you mean?
No, why would you want to take this on? What is it, that might be a good place to start the exploration. What is prompting you to take this on?
Because I've been hanging out in complete avoidance for 20 years. And I have never faced my triggers. I have never stood up to him. And I feel like I have to. Yeah.
Because here's what perhaps the confusion is. We're often told that it's the person or the circumstance that is causing our suffering, not that it's our conditioning that's causing our suffering. When we talk about freedom in this practice, we're not talking about I'm free because I could do whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want to. What we're talking about is from the conditioning. So So you don't even have to talk to your father. Even thinking about your father within quotes brings up all of the conditioned reactions to your father. So there's a way in which if you want to face your demons within quotes, what you're really talking about is facing what you experience when you think about your father, not that you have to confront your father and have some kind of experience. Do you see the difference?
I absolutely do. So I think then it comes to more a two-hand beginning on a journey of putting this through the two-handed exercise grinder.
Well, certainly as a way to be with the human being and explore what's really going on for her when she gets triggered in that way, it's probably a process map that allows you to articulate the beliefs and assumptions and your projections and who are the players. Because what you're looking for is to bring the whole process into conscious, compassionate awareness, not necessarily solving it on a content level of interacting with your father and not having, quote-unquote, a conditioned reaction.
Because I thought bringing it into consciousness and compassionate awareness means I need to get to the point where I'm not triggered.
Well, that's an interesting belief, isn't it?
Is that a misunderstanding?
Well, I would ask you to look at that, because when we say we are going for presence and ending suffering, we're looking at it from the perspective of being present to how it is, not going for some ideal experience. So whatever is telling you that if I face all my demons, I'm not going to get triggered in life, that's interesting to see where that's coming from. Because the payoff for that orientation, I project, is a lot of suffering for you. And so we want to look at that and go, really? Who says?
Oh, so that's like the inner idealist who's pseudo-Zen, taking pseudo-Zen and saying, this practice means I have to face all my triggers till I'm not triggered anymore, or something like that.
Yeah, that's a possibility to consider, right? Who says that? And so I project that the reason you called in for guidance is because intuitively there's a sensing of, wait a minute, I need a perspective here because I'm not clear where this is coming from. I need a way to look at this that doesn't necessarily just buy into the system that I'm looking from, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. So some places to look, right?
Yes. So
now,
looking
what do you
at
mean
the
by freedom? What is triggered? And you at least have clarity about some starting points, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly what. Yeah.
That conditioning says. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly why I called in. Just where do I start on the right track, not on the wrong track?
That's right. I mean, and putting broad quotes around right and wrong, right? Because I think what you're saying is, I mean, what we always say, who knows what's going on for other people, but I know what I'm experiencing. And so where the transformation happens is in me, not changing the other person or changing the external circumstances or having an experience that is abstract or idealized or any of those things. It's like this happens for me. I want to know what's going on here. I want to be able to be with this experience and be with it without suffering. So the only place you can do that is Elizabeth.
Yeah. And the recorder.
And the recorder, exactly. Well, that's just
and laughter.
In another form, right?
Yes.
As of this morning, right? We just laugh at it.
Yes.
As a way of
identification.
Yeah.
Yes, laughter is the best form of disidentification. Yeah,
completely
I love that.
Dissolves ego.
It's the weapon of the warrior at center. Laughter.
That's a good
is.
Way of putting it. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you. I really appreciate your giving me some hint, clues about where to start.
Oh, glad to do that, Elizabeth. Thank you. Anytime. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us, Elizabeth. Laughter is the weapon of the warrior at center. That's a fun notion.
Yes, I can see Elizabeth wearing a T-shirt like that.
Yes, yes, yes. And what I appreciated about that conversation is sharing what I'm seeing and then just exploring that, getting some guidance, getting some new ideas, seeing where that takes me, putting that out there, getting some more guidance, feedback. It's a beautiful process of looking and continuing to participate.
Yeah, well, and seek reflection, right? Because we can't see where we are unless we get reflected.
Yeah.
And that's just all it is. It's not that someone else has got an answer for you. It's just that there's a reflection, a total reflection in what I'm saying. Being reflected completely implies that what I'm not seeing because I'm saying is also revealed. Right?
Mm.
But it's a beautiful process.
Yes, yes. And we have another caller here.
Wonderful.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Paul from Los Angeles.
Hey, Paul.
Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me okay?
You're perfectly clear.
Yes.
Oh, good. Great. Okay, wow. You know, I'm so grateful for everything I've gotten from the practice. Let me just get right to it. I need some guidance. It seems like there's a highly conditioned and very sensitive identity that suffers with a depressed sensation at times, and it can't be reasoned with and sometimes can't be reassured, while the adult, me, has no problems really with the world or life except for being the effect of this identity. So that's whatever you want to say.
Well, so that's such an interesting description of the process, right, Paul? Because what I'm hearing you say, and tell me if this is what you are saying, that unconditional love extended to this identity doesn't seem to transform its orientation to life, right? And so here you are, you're able to go about your life, but there's this thing out there that is insistently a depressed something, right?
Yeah,
and
I mean, go ahead. This is good. Go ahead.
Well, in the universal sense, we always say this, everything that, sub-personalities, if that's one of them, need lots of things, but what they need is unconditional love. And if you offer that unconditional love and embrace something in conscious, compassionate awareness and it chooses not to come in, it's probably not anything other than ego. So if you've tried to reassure it, and if you've tried to work with it, and you've tried to do all kinds of things with it, it simply got your attention. And so you can safely ignore it.
Except that it's control, you know, it's like causing me to be, like, miserable. I mean, it sort of has its wants and needs that I'm not in control of. And
that's right. It does.
Yeah. And that they're very strong. Yeah.
So give me an example. How does that happen?
It's all, you know, I'm 72 now, but it's developed when I was in my 20s coming off drugs where, you know, I have to clear up something with someone to feel better. During the drug days, I'd be depressed a lot. So when I found this tool in my early 20s, wow, all I got to do is clear something with someone, and I feel great. So I kind of got conditioned and addicted to doing it to where now it's like controlling, you know, I can't stop it, and it's over, you know, I'm almost ashamed of the things that bother me, you know, and
uh-huh.
that I,
so would you say
and
that
I don't want to have, say it again?
Would you say that the addiction has shifted? So the addiction was to substance. Now the addiction is to a process of promises feeling
yes.
better.
I haven't looked at that, but that is the same thing. Yes, very good.
Right,
yeah.
Which is the only reason I know that, right, Paul, is because the process we're talking about, no matter what we're talking about, the highest form of addiction is to egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. So it's a thought pattern. It basically says, okay, Paul, in order for you to, you're feeling depressed, in order for you to feel good, you need to go clear something up with somebody. And it's such an obsessive thought pattern that it generates energy, and if you're familiar with that, you know, thoughts have tremendous amount of energy. It gets translated into behavior, and then there's an action, and you realize that that's what's going on. There's a thought pattern here that because you attend to it, builds energy and results in behavior. Would you
say? Which then makes me feel better short term, and then something else comes, and it's like a vicious cycle.
Exactly right. And the reason you know it's a suffering process is because you feel like you don't have choice, right? It's exactly what we were talking about, Jenny, in the previous call, that it's just a program that runs, and you have a tremendous awareness that it's a program that's running. And so the way to disidentify from it, the way to stop letting it, you know, in your life,
control my life,
giving attention to it, because your attention is what gives it energy. So this is going on a diet, or if we're using substance abuse terms, right? You've got to not have that next drink or that next shot.
Don't take the drink, no matter what. Even if it's lasting a long time, just. And, you know, Sherry said that because I, in an email class, I brought that up, and she said, you know, I asked, should I stare down the bottle? And that's basically said, definitely.
So, in other words, there's a detox process, right? So the whole thing is you're feeling a certain way. I want to feel better. So the wanting to feel better is the hook and the carrot for the short-term relief. And so part of what we have to train ourselves to do, which you're very familiar with in a different context of actual substance, is to be willing to feel that depression or that depressed state or whatever it is that is talking you into feeling while you don't do the thing that it wants you to do, right? So my example of this is a very different one where when I initially started to meditate, not in group but by myself, I would set the timer. And about 3 minutes into the meditation, it would start. Is it how much more time? How much more time? Do you want to check how much more time? Right? How much more time is there for the meditation? And eventually that attending to that process would cause me to go unconscious and reach for the clock and look at the timer. And it would be like a minute before the meditation ends, and I'd feel rotten because I hadn't waited it out. Right?
Yes.
But the thinking of it eventually drives you to almost unconsciously doing the thing that will really it's prompting you to do.
Right.
And
go ahead.
Yes. Go ahead. You just have to?
No, drop it and put your attention on something. You know, I have a whole big plan that I sometimes works too, where I'll just do really difficult things or do physical things, building something or whatever with tools, and that'll just shift my attention enough. Yeah, don't give it any attention at all. Yeah, it's good to get support on that. That's definitely the right thing, you know, the thing to do. Okay, that's really great.
And to me, the one thing that I work with all the time is the recorder. When I'm in those difficult places, I just pick up the quadrant and I just talk nonstop into it until that thing passes, mm-hmm. right? I'm feeling awful. I'm feeling mm-hmm. depressed. I really want to go out and talk to this person. Whatever it is that in order to be able to be with what's going on for me, to get the thoughts outside of my head into the recorder, to verbalize that process, allows us not mm-hmm. to let that energy build, because as it's going on for me, I'm translating mm-hmm. the energy outside. I'm dissipating it by talking about it to the recorder or talking from it to the recorder.
It's actually not as important maybe to listen back to that, but just to keep doing it, right?
It's a tool. Exactly. You could, if you have recordings that can keep your attention, like you want to make powerful recordings that are compelling and you can listen to them and train to listen to them as a way of waiting out the thoughts, you could try mm-hmm. different things, right? Basically mm-hmm. whatever works for you. And that directing your attention to something that takes all your attention is one way to starve that process. And so recording about it is another way. Listening to powerful recordings might be another way.
Yeah.
And whatever happens, Paul gets taken care of in absolute love. No standards here, right? No standards, no punishment, no self-hate. If you know, after 2.5 hours of talking into the recorder, he gets into the car and goes and talks to this person in order to feel better, we just watch what happens. No self-hate at that point. Because that's another way to cut the addiction. It's the whole process is rile you up, make you do something, feel better a little, and then feel bad.
And then feel shame. And then feel shame about it. And then,
Right. And then decide to never do it again. So that's kind of the shame part as well. As many parts of this process that we can interrupt, we want to practice that, right? So it's a broken circuit, not a well-formed groove that you're just run around and run around.
Good. That's great. Wow, that was fantastic.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, I really needed a solid, support for that direction. Which, I do sometimes, and sometimes it seems, it's not working. I'm gonna have to, whatever. But that's the correct way to look at it. Thank you so much, Ashwini.
Oh, you're most welcome. Keep us posted, okay, Paul? All right.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks. And thanks, Mike. Thanks, Michael. Okay.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Paul. And Ashwini, I was following exactly along with my own content. Could see every detail as you were laying it out. And that's the beauty of practice, of course, which is to see the process that we are all in and the specific content that relates to me.
Yes. It's all an addiction, isn't it, Michael?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
We all practice with the same thing, with different content,
the
same process.
And it's just so helpful to hear from everybody else doing their own, working with their own content, because I'm not caught up in Paul's content. I'm not caught up in Elizabeth's content. So it gives me a chance to see the process so that I can step out of the content that's sticky for me.
Yes, exactly so.
And we have time for one more caller here.
Excellent.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, good evening. Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. It's Todd calling from Kelowna, British Columbia.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey. Oh, I'm enjoying the show so much. Oh, I second, third, and fourth what Michael's just saying, that I'm not wrapped up in everyone's content, but my process is identical. It's brilliant.
Mm.
It's brilliant because I don't have that charge around it, so I have distance.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I can Right. That's a gift. I've been looking at the process of commitments lately. And how supportive they are by making them and then aspiring to keep them. And the one I've been working with for quite a while now, and it's one that is daily. There's a lot of practice meditations. The one that really I see so much is the virtual meditation each morning.
Yeah.
I commit to it 7 days a week, first sit of the day. So Pacific time, for those folks that don't know about it, Monday through Thursday, Pacific time, 7 a.m., Friday, Saturday, 7:30 a.m., Sunday mornings, 8 a.m. And I commit to show up for all those. And there isn't a morning that I don't see something about a process of keeping that commitment or not keeping it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's so, mm-hmm. So good. I'm probably in the 80 to 90% range, which is okay. You know, not that we're keeping score.
80 to 90% of
showing up, right?
Yeah.
Of showing up. So maybe 6 out of 7, or you know, maybe out of a month, 25 out of 30. That's not bad. You know, that's showing up.
Well, how about we just say, "Well done, Todd."
Right.
And embrace the accomplishment.
But what I love about it, the structure of it, what I love so much about it is there's many different elements, but one is I participate in stewarding a couple of them, so that's really showing up because I'm stewarding, so you know I've got to you know set the call, and then those days that I'm not stewarding is I want to show up for the person who is kind of stewarding and for myself. It's kind of like a reflective listening buddy call in a way.
Yes.
Because I'm not alone. I'm with Sangha, and you know I'm there showing up for other folks, which I'm showing up for myself, and then folks are showing up for me. I love that whole process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it puts us in touch with what a powerful what inspires us, right? I will
say
for the love of others.
Yeah.
And that's a good. That's such an important. Projection to own about the authenticity that it is you, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's a tremendous level of caring that would propel you to keep this commitment because mm-hmm. it's your offering and people
right.
are going to show up and participate, and therefore you showing up is so important. And
right.
in the reverse, that because people are doing the same for you, then your thank you, your gratitude is expressed by you showing up for them.
Yes.
And it's such a beautifully sacred interchange, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everything else around it, what you want to or you don't feel like it, but you still do or you can't because those are all just observations of what is interfering with that experience.
Yeah.
And you get to see that too.
Exactly. I get to see when I get into the karma of I don't want to, I don't feel like it, and I get talked out of a sit. And what we're so encouraged with by Sherry and yourself and so many folks is that there's no beatings, there's no self-hate, there's no, darn, you know. You know, I just wanted to sleep an extra 5 minutes. I missed the snooze button, and I slept through the virtual sit. But it's like, okay, next time I want to sleep in a little bit more, you know, maybe bring more awareness to setting the alarm and not, or maybe just like, oh, you know what, I'm good. I'm just going to get up. Because once I'm up, I'm up. Like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Once my feet are on the floor, I'm there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's so much in what you're saying, right, Todd? Because so when you don't show up, there's no self-hate, which is a whole practice. Then there's a, how can I make it work? What did I learn from this process that I can alter so I can honor what I choose to honor? And it's really a choice, right? It's not a contest. I think that's the other element that you're pointing out. Keeping a commitment is a practice strategy. It's a structure that assists me to know where I am at all times, not to keep the commitment. Necessarily.
Right.
But to be present.
Yeah. That was so perfectly stated. Yeah, that is such my experience. Because what it really does, for me, it takes it out of the hands of conditioning. It takes it, like you said, out of those standards or expectations or you know, scorekeeping, because that's not the point. That's wholly not the point of the commitment. The commitment is to the deepest heart's desire of waking up and ending suffering, and all those practice tools and all the support that is given to us as practitioners assists in that deepest desire of the heart.
Exactly. Right, because if you're showing up and you're not showing up with presence, you might as well not be practicing. You might as well not keep the commitment.
I know. Yeah, I giggle because that disidentifies me, because I've been identified and shown up identified and gone through that process,
right,
where I'm not present.
Right, because all you're doing is not practicing identification, and that's not what you're practicing. We're not
right.
practicing identification, we're not practicing self-hate. So,
no.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Great. I see we're at the top of the hour, so I'll say a deep gusto and gratitude, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Thanks, Ashwini. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Thank you, Todd. And another great show, Ashwini, and I'm grateful for you and for all of our callers and Sangha, and it was great.
Thank you, Michael. Great gratitude for you being there every single Tuesday. So
my pleasure.
Go happy.
Thank you, and go happy.